Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Red Sox fans, here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is what we like to call in the biz an emergency podcast, because an hour and a half ago, we didn't have any idea we would be coming on. And the Red Sox have traded Andrew Benintendi to the Royals. It ended up being a three-team deal. The Mets are involved, so the Red Sox will be getting players from both the Mets and the Royals organization, and we'll break that down shortly. But I guess just kind of getting right into it, Andrew will lead off with you. Let me just pitch it to you this way. 3 years ago, Benintendi makes an epic catch to end what I think was the final game of the Astros series in the ALCS, which sent us to the World Series against the Dodgers. Ended on a very spectacular catch. Could you imagine 3 years later we would be trading him with 2 years left on his rookie deal? I think they bought up his arbitration, but 2 years left on his deal nonetheless. And for the package of prospects we got, could you have foreseen this?
No, this is crazy to me. That catch in Houston was unbelievable. I think it was Bregman with the bases loaded, game on the line, and he just goes all out and makes that catch, which was one of the best plays in Red Sox history due to the moment, and just sending them to the World Series. And now here we are 2 years in a row talking on the 10th, and it's another day where one of the bees is traded. Last year it was Betts on this date. This year it's Benintendi, and I love Benintendi, but something happened. Something went wrong along the way. He might have gone too big. He was never supposed to be a giant power guy. He put up some solid numbers in Arkansas, but he was never Benny Biceps down there. And then when he kind of got that flow and mojo up here, he just lost his athleticism and he lost his ability to just hit. So it sucks, but I think it's a good move for both team and player. Gives him a chance to come back, to show what he worked on all offseason, which I admittedly was optimistic on him turning it around. I thought we might see a 290 hitter, but we might see a 290 hitter in Kansas City now.
Charlie, your thoughts?
I remember seeing his second career home run in Baltimore and thinking, wow, like this could be something fun. Like, this is a guy that, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was the seventh pick in the draft that year, and we got that as a consolation for absolutely being terrible the year before that, and thinking, oh, wow, this would be great. And at the end of 2017, he almost had 100 RBIs. He cracked 90, and I thought, this could be someone who goes 25-100, 30-100. It kind of reminds me of the mentality that people had at, like, J.D. Drew. Like, okay, maybe he hits 100. Maybe it's 30 home runs. Maybe it's 300. Like, who knows what happens? And then the following year, the home runs, RBIs went down, his batting average went up, and I actually thought he had a better year. Like, he still stole more bases. He had 100 runs for the first time. Like, things were starting to click. Year after that, everything falls apart. And then we all know what happened in 2020. It just, I'd be lying to you if I said that, you know, a couple of years ago that the Killer Bees were going to be no longer the Killer Bees, not even 3 years later. Like, you have Benintendi, Betts, and Bradley, which made a formidable outfielding core. One gets traded. Then a year later, as Andrew mentioned, another one gets traded and one's still a free agent. This is an absolute shock. I think this is going to be good for him. I think a change of scenery is going to help because it's clear that I think Red Sox ownership had completely lost faith. Signing Hunter Renfro just about ended Benintendi's chance to be a starter full time, if at all. Like, it was going to be a platoon spot at best. It's hard, but I do wish him the best. But as Andrew mentioned, like so eloquently put, something happened mechanically in his mind. Something just, it was like getting the hitting yips. He couldn't hit. 4 hits and 39 at bats. Thank God he stopped hitting after 39 because he would have finished under 100 for the season the way that he was going. It was ugly. Like, things just were not clicking. So I wish him the best, but I think it was best for both parties to part ways.
Yeah, before I get going on my thoughts, I forgot to mention to, you know, both of you and as well as the audience, we're having like snow removal going on around my building. So lots of trucks backing up with reverse signals, nothing I can do. So hopefully you guys in the audience can hang with it. And we'll just do the best we can. You know, my thoughts, getting back to that catch, AJ Hinch, before he ultimately got fired from the Astros, gave Benintendi a lot of praise, and he said that he watched him make that adjustment just moments before the pitch that led to that diving catch, and it was just such a great moment. And as Charlie was saying, Benintendi was drafted in June or July of 2015 rather. And then only 14 months later was on the big league club. I haven't seen anybody come up that fast. Maybe it's happened and it probably has. It doesn't happen often, but he flew through the minors. You know, he had that, you know, those few years with Arkansas and had an epic final year with Arkansas. I think he hit close to 30 bombs and just kind of flew up, and he was a very good hitter, had good power at first. He was elite when it came to getting on base. His OBP was, you know, in the 360s, 370s that first couple of years. And I just never would have foreseen this regression. And I think it was all mental. I know he did have some injuries, but I think it was very much a mental thing. We saw the power go. He's just stopped hitting home runs all of a sudden. He was getting hits for a while, but eventually that dissipated as well. And a lot of us had concerns coming into 2020. Can he be a leadoff hitter in place of Mookie? And it turned out that he couldn't hit at all, really. 4 for 39, like Charlie said. And I don't know if that injury was even legit. Maybe they were just shutting him down for the year just to get him out of there. We were well on our way to a lost season, and I question whether, you know, whether he was injured to the point he couldn't come back. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. But you know, it's not unheard of for, you know, the phantom injury to help a player kind of, you know, get right again. And just crazy that, you know, he was one of the better outfielders in the sport to, you know, playing for the Kansas City Royals. So
it doesn't seem like just yesterday we were talking about, like, what do you think an extension would be to buy out his arbitration? Exactly. It's like, do we give him like the Christian Yelich 7 at 49.5 with an option? And now it's like, okay, well, we paid 2.8 of his salary, so we'll get better prospects back now. It's like, wow, he's just going to be a footnote now. And there's going to be a year of Benintendi that we remember. And it's not this illustrious Red Sox career that we all thought it was going to be.
Do you think that people are actually going to remember him for just one season, or do you think they're just going to remember a moment?
So
because I
Go on. Sorry, no.
I mean, I actually, it's funny because I was like, I think it was Benintendi, and I think it was Bregman that hit it with the bases loaded, but I don't remember. And I felt it was Bregman more than Benintendi making the catch, because I just remember I can't stand Alex Bregman. I literally can't. He's one of the players that I really do hope catches one somewhere there. Like, I just don't like him. And looking back and thinking back at it, that was a ridiculous catch. That was a ridiculous play. But that was when Benintendi was completely not in his head, playing games left and right out of his mind. And now it's a shadow. He was a shadow of his former self in 2020. And so are we going to remember him for like the 1.5, 2 good seasons? Or is it going to be like you mentioned, like, oh man, do you remember that one great play? It's like Dave Roberts is not going to be remembered in Boston for being a fantastic baseball player. He's going to be remembered for stealing the most important stolen base in history, like arguably in history, stealing second base against the Yankees, which began it was the beginning of breaking an 86-year curse. Like, I feel like it's going to be like that. Like, people will always be thankful for that catch. But are we going to remember him as being a fantastic player? No.
Well, I think people are going to more remember him, just his personality and how much of a fan favorite he was. But in terms of production, I think it's going to be 2018, and people are going to have in their mind when they look back in a few years after they're, I don't know if they're still going to be mad about this because, you know, Brockholtz and Benintendi were like the two fan pink hat favorites. But all you really are going to be able to see on paper was 2018. There really wasn't much in 2019. Obviously, 2020 was, I'm willing to give anyone a pass on 2020, but that was terrible as well. So it was really a flash in the pan with a great, amazing highlight play in the ALCS. So I think we might romanticize it a little bit more than turns out to actually have been.
I think it depends on what he does from here, really. I mean, and before we get into that, though, when you talk about the regression and the downslide that just kind of happened abruptly, is there anyone to compare that to? Like, has that happened previously? I mean, Alan Craig comes to mind. There might have been some injury, you know, factors in that, but it just, I'm still surprised he never bounced back. And there was another player as well I had in mind, just escaped me. But, oh, Grady Sizemore, another career that just ended early, you know, in his early
30s. But at least we actually saw his injuries, though. Sizemore's, that is.
Yeah.
Like, those were visible, and we saw that happen.
Right.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if there's another case of a guy just all of a sudden he's done in a city.
From a pitching standpoint, we've seen it with, you know, Daniel Bard, you know, out of our organization. Mm-hmm. Dontrell Willis was another guy who just kind of fell off the map, you know, as a pitcher in another organization. And so, I mean, it's just crazy to me how it falls off. I mean, Charlie, what are your thoughts? Any other comparisons?
Dude, Grady Sizemore, man. Oh, my God. You want to talk about throwback? He was great for, I think, like 4 or 5 years, and he was always, like, one of the better players in baseball. Everyone's like, oh, man, I wish we had someone like that on our team. And then I think he was out for, like, 2 seasons. It was either 2 out of 3 seasons. Like, he missed a season that he played, and he missed another one, or he was out for 2 straight years. But he couldn't get healthy. Dontrell Willis was a 20-game winner, and then after that, it was just – and he did it as a kid. It was like his second year in the bigs. And I remember D-Train had this ridiculous leg kick before he'd go up. And it was just the goofiest delivery of all time. And he was great. And then either it was, I don't think it was an injury either, because he didn't get injured when he started. Dontrelle Willis just like either he got figured out, something happened, but he went from 20 game winner to just bust. And it didn't make any sense because after his 20 game season where he won, I don't remember how many wins he had after that. Maybe 20, 30. Like he just wasn't good anymore. It's like a player that plays really well in their rookie year and then capsizes. It happens. You get figured out, whatever. But it's sad. I don't know. I mean, did Grady Sizemore ever have Grady Sizemore is better on paper than Andrew Benintendi was. Benintendi we're going to be talking about because he made the catch or a catch, which shut down Bregman. I don't know if I could find a player. Dontrelle Willis would probably be closer to Benintendi than I think Grady Sizemore, because Grady Sizemore was consistent for 4 or 5 seasons before he got injured for 2 years and then just was a shadow.
He was in Boston.
And we came to Boston, and then I think he got traded.
Yeah, to Philly.
He was only
there
for a little while. He got traded to Philly. Yeah, exactly. He got traded to Philly. And then he ended his career, I think, in Tampa Bay because he still was in our division. And I don't remember if he signed as a free agent, got traded again, but he kind of just floated around like a journeyman, like doing whatever. Like, I'll just play for whoever wants to sign me. I feel more comfortable comparing him to Dontrelle Willis than I would be to Grady Sizemore. But at one point, both were scary. You didn't want to face Grady Sizemore in the lineup, and you didn't want to be pitched to if you had Dontrelle Willis on the mound, at least for the first couple of years of his career. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if it'd be fair to compare Benintendi to Sizemore. Maybe make a case for Dontrelle, D. Will.
Yeah, and I guess what I was getting at is he still has a say. You know, he can still bounce back and have a solid career. You know, the the Kansas City Royals have had a kind of an interesting offseason, and they're in a weird division. I mean, the White Sox on paper look like they could go to a World Series, but they might also finish last. You know, there's just a lot of weird dynamics in that organization. I feel weird counting out the Indians. You know, they still have some decent pitching. Terry Francona has never had a losing season from 04 to the present. The Twins could still be, you know, an upper 80s win team. So the Royals are interesting, and I think they're you know, gonna try to contend this year with the roster that they have, and you know, worst case for them, you know, maybe they trade Benintendi again at the deadline and get something back for him. But so before we get into the package, I kind of took the temperature of Red Sox fans about how they felt about this trade. And it's very split evenly. There were really three choices for Red Sox fans. They could have picked the option where they are bleeping pissed. 41% chose that option. Another 41% said that they were sad but understood the trade. 10% feels that it was an excellent move. And as I said before we come on, I had to include a not a Sox fan, no opinion option, because you're going to have Yankees fans that want to see the results. So that option's on there for them. But for all intents and purposes, it's 50-50, you know, as far as how people feel about the trade. And you know, Chaim Bloom has had a interesting couple of years. He had to trade Mookie. You know, there's been a slew of moves, and most of that 2018 team is now gone. I mean, who's left? I mean, Bogaerts, Devers, Sale will be back.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, Sale's on there.
Erod. So
Barnes.
Yeah, well, I guess there's a handful, but it just seems like most of the team's gone. And, you know, you're going to have the homers that are just mad, but and as critical as I am of Bloom, I mean, it had to happen because 3 months from now, he's still off in Neverland and you'd get absolutely nothing.
Now,
yeah, I'm curious to see how many of these people that went with option A freaking.
We lost.
Yeah.
Did we lose Andrew? I think I lost. I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. We lost him.
I'll say this much, man. Like, I'll be disappointed. I was disappointed when he left. Andrew, we lost you for a couple seconds, but I was disappointed, like, kind of shocked when I heard it. And here's the thing. I don't wish him ill will. I want him to succeed. I want him to do well. I think it wasn't it fell apart. Andrew touched up on it earlier. Like, he wasn't known as being, you know, Benny Biceps. He wasn't known as being a power hitter. He was that kind of elusive speedster who would get on base, and that was his play. That was his role. And he tried transitioning to something that he wasn't. And I think it backfired. It was like Daniel Bard was a reliever. They never should have converted him to a starter. It blew him up. And for what, 7 years, he was out of the game. Then he came back last year and kind of refound himself. And that was exciting. Like, I wouldn't boo him. If he came to pitch at Fenway Park, there's no way that I'm booing him when he's pitching against the Red Sox. He deserved to play. So with Benintendi, you made the right move. It just didn't work. And you hope that, again, we talked about this last year, and I'm sure Andrew would agree, you're hoping that one or two of these prospects hit. Because as long as like one of them hits, it's worth it. Benintendi, if he busts, then whatever. If he ends up turning it back and turning the clock around and whatnot, this isn't going to be like the same reaction that Red Sox fans have if Jeff Bagwell was the player who ended up blowing up and becoming one of the best first basemen of all time. This is a guy who was only here for a short while. It wasn't working. We moved on, and that's it. Done.
Yeah, and Andrew, you left off saying you'd be curious as to...
Oh, yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay, great. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm curious to see how many of those people that voted for option A, I want to see their tweets from the beginning of last year when Benintendi was, 0 for his first 32. So, I wanted to know how much we're romanticizing the Benintendi we thought we were going to have as opposed to the one that we actually do, because I think at the end of the day, we might be overrating him, and you just got to move on and get it before it's a dead asset if he does come out and hits 125 in spring training in the first 2 weeks of the year.
And like I was saying, basically he did what he had to do regardless of how I feel about him. We're getting some bad static. I don't know. It might be your headset, Andrew. Yeah. This is...
How about now?
I think you're good now. Yeah. I'm not hearing it at the moment. But yeah, so regardless of how we feel about Bloom, he did what he had to do. It was a tough scenario. If you could predict the future, it would be, you know, it would definitely be easier. But yeah, so Andrew, tell us about the trade package. We're getting players back from the Royals as well as the Mets. It's not a blockbuster package by any means.
Yeah, so the piece that we know of, the main piece that we know of right now, is Franchi Cordero, and he's a Fangraphs darling. If you want to find anything, if you want to find someone that loves you, find someone that loves you like Fangraphs loves Cordero, because they have so many articles on him, how he's one of the most exciting players in baseball. And he, you know, he's got the tools for it. He's a 70 power guy, a 70 run guy. It's just a matter of making consistent contact. So if he can put it together, you got something there. If he doesn't, then we're going to be relying on the players to be named later. So the final look of this is that the Red Sox are only saving $1.4 million. So this isn't a salary dump. So we're going to get two prospects from the Royals and one from the Mets. And I am still under the assumption, and again, I could be wrong. I don't think I will be, but I think the player from the Mets is going to be pretty legit. They got Khalil Lee from the Royals, who's the Royals' number 8 overall prospect, and they gave up nothing. They gave up a guy that they just got for Steven Matz a few weeks ago from the Blue Jays, who I think was also Rule 5 eligible. So they gave up legitimately nothing and gotten number 8 prospects. So I see a good player coming, at least one good player coming the Red Sox way. And that's going to be after spring training, once the minor league season starts, because both franchises agreed to let the Red Sox scout the players due to the uncertainty that last year provided. And God knows no one was in the stadiums to scout any minor leaguers. So give it a few weeks and we'll know more.
Charlie, your thoughts on the return?
I am not as well versed as Andrew, so I'm going to defer to his expertise in that regard. But from what I can see, the two in particular, with Franchi Cordero and with Andrew Benintendi, they're almost the same age. Benintendi, I think, has just had a little bit more opportunity, granted, of where he was in the draft. I think he had a little bit more spotlight set on him, and opportunities may have just not presented themselves. Franchi's got 12 career home runs in 4 seasons, if I'm not mistaken. And it was 2018 where he had 7 of those home runs. Didn't really do too much in 2019. Obviously, last year was a blown season, so not as many opportunities for teams and whatnot. But last year was his first year in Kansas City. So I don't think Kansas City is a hitter's park. It's more pitcher's park than a hitter's park. So that might have been one of the differences. And there was one video kind of swimming around on Twitter. And when you look at his follow through, there's two players that it reminds me of. It's like a hybrid version of like David Ortiz meets Ken Griffey Jr. And if that follow through and mixes in with the fact that he can see all sorts of pitching and whatnot, you know, like as Andrew and I are agreeing way too much today, this is very bizarre. But like that fan darling, this could be like finding gold, you know, like this could have been a player that, okay, cool. So Franchi hits and maybe we get lucky and another prospect hits. Because if Franchi hits 10 to 15 home runs this year, or even 10 home runs, I don't even care. That's a win. It's a win. Because I don't know if we're going to see 10 home runs from Benintendi this season. No, he's not going to hit 250. No, he's not going to hit 300. He has shown the ability that he can steal a base. Maybe he can bring that back again. He's young. He's 26 years old. Same age as Benintendi. I'd like to believe that if the right team is built around somebody like this, he has a good foundation and a good camp around him. Who knows? The sky's the limit for this kid. So I'd like to believe, assuming positive intent, that this kid could do some damage. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Right? Let's give it a shot.
Yeah, and you know, admittedly, I'm definitely not a prospect guru myself, but you know, you just kind of hope that Bloom has an eye for something, and you know, the pitching coaches can develop the pitchers, and the hitting coaches can help develop the hitters. Basically, that's my scientific analysis there. But just hoping, you know, like Andrew said, you know, one decent player emerges from the package, and it's going to take probably a couple of years before we really figure that out. But it'll be a cool story if it happens. One of my favorite ones, I mean, we got Josh Taylor for Devin Marrero, you know, and Taylor didn't look great last year, but he had the COVID thing. And, you know, we're not going to hold 2020 against many players, but we potentially might have gotten, you know, a high leverage reliever for Marrero. So you just kind of hope that someone, you know, like that could emerge. And one thing I did wonder before coming on, I wasn't sure what the money situation was, but if we're only saving $1.4 million, that still probably rules out a Jackie Bradley reunion versus the whole $6.6 million.
Yeah, if they got rid of all that salary, I think we would have probably seen a Bradley signing piggybacked on there, but I think we can safely rule that out. And I think Bloom said as much in his press conference tonight. I think he said, we'll continue to touch base, but this doesn't change anything.
Yeah. If anything, the price for Jackie Bradley now to come back to Boston, while it does clear up a little bit of space, it's not a necessary must to add him. And I know there were two teams that were in on him earlier. I know Houston at one point was in on him. That kind of cooled off. San Francisco hasn't really let up. So that's still one of the teams that is, or has rather, expressed a decent amount of interest on him. I think the Houston Astros have put the candle out. The Red Sox have just about done the same thing. Maybe Toronto goes and gets someone like that. I mean, again, it goes back to one of the original things. Like, who thought 3 years ago that we wouldn't be talking about the killer three Bs still all being in Boston? Like, you thought maybe, okay, maybe cards get dealt and one goes. Worst case scenario, two. But two in the same year and three within a year? Like, that's silly, you know? that's silly.
I'd love it if Bradley came out and was like, yo, they haven't even talked to me since, like, December 19th. Call them out on it. I'm sure they have communicated since then. But
it's insane. I'm really curious to see what Boris's asking price is at this point, because you figure we're coming up on spring training here. It's a week away from guys reporting to Florida and Arizona, and you still have him. You have Odorizzi.
Right.
What's his name?
Odorizzi. Who's the agent for Odorizzi? It's not Boris.
It's not Boris. No,
but we know Boris. We know what Boris does. I mean, Boris has J.D. Martinez is with Boris. And J.D. Right. Martinez didn't sign before free agency when he was a Red Sox. I was so in on J.D. Martinez and Giancarlo Stanton that summer. I was like, let's get them both. You know, before the season even starts, let's get them both. And then Giancarlo got traded to New York. I was like, screw Giancarlo Stanton. Let's get J.D. Martinez. Because in my mind, I was like, okay, Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz reincarnated into J.D. Martinez and Giancarlo Stanton. We lost Stanton, and J.D. Martinez was like, okay, we got him. Holy crap, he won't sign in Boston. I no longer want you. You're causing too many problems, because Boris was trying to drive up the price. It wasn't working out. He ended up getting the deal he wanted, but I'm not going to lie. At first, I was like, you better have a career year in Boston, your first year, because I'm super annoyed with the fact that you don't want to come play in Boston. You don't want to come play here? I don't want you here. Bye. So I think that Scott Boris is doing the same thing with Jackie Bradley. If Jackie Bradley misses a little bit of spring training, he's not going to care. He wants to get his clients paid. I get it.
It seems like Boris misplays a lot of the mid-level guys. You know, he gets his bigger clients' contracts. He can get the lower-level guys onto an MLB team. But those mid-level guys, he just kind of screws up. I think he is Mike Moustakas's agent, and they declined the qualifying offer. So, yeah, you know, I think the audio thing might be me. Just trying to move my electronic equipment away from other electronic equipment. But Moustakas, like I said, declined the qualifying offer and came back on a $5 million deal, you know, ended up getting a third of what he would have gotten had he taken the qualifying offer. I think that was in 2017. So that was a bad misplay. We know how the Steven Drew situation worked out after the World Series year. You know, he didn't end up on a team till after the draft. So
Paxton too. That was the one guy I couldn't think of. Boris is his agent. So Boris has a lot of work to do in the next 7 days if he wants to get these guys down to Florida and, you know, on a field. This is crazy. You could probably beat the Pirates and maybe like the Reds with the remaining free agents if you made a roster out of them, because there are some quality guys out there. And I'm curious if any of these players are the first player that's going to say, screw it, give me a 1 year deal, I'll just do this again next year when everything is settled. And someone's going to get a bargain, I assume.
Yeah. Off of Bradley, especially if he goes to a team with a lot of higher end depth, especially. But I wouldn't rule out the Astros, though. I just feel like it makes a lot of sense. And
it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into one other acquisition, which isn't quite official, but it's basically official. The Red Sox have basically tentatively agreed to a deal with Hirokazu Sawamura, who I think is he from Japan? Did we figure that out? fairly certain he is from Japan. 32-year-old reliever. It'll be a 2-year, $2.4 million deal. So I guess 1.2 per season. He is coming off of a semi-rough season. He started out, he was traded at, you know, partway through the season, but when he was with his first team, 6.08 ERA, you know, came out of the gates in rough shape, and then down the stretch had a 1.71 ERA after the trade. So, you know, the Red Sox have a pretty good history with Japanese pitchers. Junichi Tozawa assassinated Miguel Cabrera every time he faced him in the 2013 ALCS, and of Koji Uehara, you know, put forth probably the best single season we've ever seen from any reliever in at least recent history, if not ever. You know, so some success there. Hideki Okajima back from the, you know, 07-08 team. So, you know, now Bloom is trying to kind of put his mark on that market by bringing over Sawamura. So, Andrew, what are your thoughts?
I love it, especially at that amount. That's nothing. 1.2, that's a lottery ticket and one I'd love to scratch, because if this guy's throwing 96 to 98 with a 93-mile-an-hour splitter, he should have success in his first year if his command is right, because none of these batters will have seen him before. So there's the upper hand. Who knows? Maybe it's only good for the 1 year, but even if he's great this year and sucks next year, whatever. So you paid him 2.4 for 1 year. I love it. It's a low risk, high reward, and have a good time in Worcester. If you can't throw strikes, it's not really going to set us back too much.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. It's incredibly low risk. $1 million. I mean, what's the veteran league minimum you'd be paying somebody in Major League Baseball? What's the league?
I think it's around there.
It's basically that, right? Yeah. You're getting someone who's got no track record in the majors, so other teams are not going to know what he's going to do. They have a slight idea, obviously. They've got like a little bit of a ticker on him, but I mean, not going to blow anyone away in strikeouts. You know, he, I'm looking at his numbers right now, and with the Yomiuri team in 2020, 7 innings, 5 runs on 4 hits, 10 walks, 2 strikeouts. So you wonder what's going on, but overall, he still finished up with 42 strikeouts and just under 42 innings pitched. So he's averaging a strikeout an inning. The worst you could do, he fails after year one. That's all right. 1.2 on the books. Whatever. It's not that big of a hit. When you think about it, like, this is just, you're trying to get a little bit of depth. And for 1.2 million, if this guy ends up turning into like a Koji Uehara type player, like, I mean, I doubt that's going to happen. Koji was like, that was insane. The luck that we ended up getting. And that was all because of pitchers the Red Sox had signed from the Pirates. That was I think it was the Joel Hanrahan year, if I'm not mistaken. Hanrahan bombed, and Koji Uehara was like, hold my beer, and hold my sake, whatever, and just crushed it. Like, absolutely, as you put it, he redefined closer role in Boston. It was like, oh, cool, sweet. Like, whenever the ninth inning is here, you know you're going to see a little bit of magic. And that's kind of what it was. So if this guy ends up just becoming like a situational guy, you know, okay, he's going to come in, get like one or two guys out. Sweet. Awesome. So we have like what's the name of that? Was it Randy Myers? What was the name of the guy who was a situational pitcher? He would come in for like one or two guys. The Mets also had a guy who had like 46 appearances, but only had like 28 innings pitched. He'd come out for like one or two batters. Who knows if he turns out to be that, that's okay too. $1 million? You're not paying the guy $10 million a year.
Yeah, the thing about the Koji year, too, is Hanrahan was acquired that winter, and he went down, but we're like, it's fine, we have Andrew Bailey, he's healthy now, and then he goes down with a shoulder injury, and then we're like, it's still fine, we got Andrew Miller, broke out in 2012, and then he breaks his ankle, and then there was a lot of flip-flopping going around, and then by about July, Koji finally emerged, and you know, it's a miracle that John Farrell figured that out, of all things. But yeah, so that was Koji. And getting back to Sawamura, you know, he's getting added to a bullpen that I was never really particularly worried about. I mean, we've got a lot of depth. You got Darwin's and Hernandez, and I think most of us on this podcast feel like he's probably the closer of the future. But when you go outside of this podcast, it doesn't seem like anybody thinks that. You know, I had Bradford on, and he thinks this is a make or break year, and you know, that's what he thinks. And so just not a ton of people are convinced with Hernandez, but I'm pretty optimistic. But aside from Hernandez, you got Adam Ottavino, you got Ryan Brazier coming off of a pretty good year. If you want to be an extreme optimist, you can say two out of his last 3 years have been really good. Matt Barnes, I like him as a situational guy. Some people think he's the closer. You know, and then you got Josh Taylor, Austin Bryce. I could see him figuring it out and being a, you know, an important part of that bullpen. And now you have Sawamura, who I think is a bonus, and we'll take what we can get. And I think that cancels out Brandon Workman now. That's the move. We were talking about how Bradley, you know, wouldn't be brought back, you know, with the outfield deal we just did. And now I think it's pretty much confirmed that Workman won't be back either. So one thing does come to mind, though, with Sawamura, though, now that I think about it, you had Sagano have a decent 4-year offer on the table, but chose to stay in Japan. And he's going to get paid over in Japan. And Sawamura, you know, doesn't seem to be that highly desired by those teams if, you know, if he's signing a $2.4 million contract over here. So just kind of hoping it, hoping I'm not reading into it too much. But like I said, you know, if he turns out great, you know, it's a bonus to have him in a bullpen that has a lot of upside anyway.
Yeah, this is one of those moves I have zero concern about. It'll be a footnote in history if it doesn't work out, and if it does, we'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, and his name's going to get botched all season long. I already know.
Oh, it's going to be terrible.
Yeah, my talk to text is not gonna say his name, so it'll be interesting if he does end up being good to see what kind of a nickname emerges. Yeah, I mean, the first half of his first name is Hero, so you know, maybe that ends up being it, but yeah,
he's play I Need a Hero when he comes out of the bullpen,
yeah. So, do we, is there any other MLB wide things pressing?
No, I think we figured out that spring training was going to be held on time, that there's going to be no DH. And I think that's kind of where we're at. I think it's just par for the course, and I hope everyone wears their tracelets down in spring training and nothing gets shut down for 2 weeks and the season gets pushed back. I think we're just in wait and see mode at this point.
So I'll say this much. There was a bit of sad news for the Red Sox that happened today. I'm not talking about, you know, not trying to be funny about Andrew Benintendi, but I don't know if everybody heard about Billy Conigliaro.
No.
Billy Conigliaro, Boston Red Sox first draftee and brother of Tony, died at the age of 73. So that did happen today as well. They're talking about how, according to ESPN, the first ever Red Sox draftee pick who started out in the Boston outfield at the star-crossed brother Tony, later spent years taking care of him after a heart attack, died Wednesday. He was 73 years old, died in his home in Beverly, Massachusetts. So I think I can safely say from our crew to the Conigliaro family, our hearts go to your family. Sorry for your loss.
Absolutely. Yeah, and then his brother, you know, had a, you know, a sad turn of events. So,
right.
Yeah. Yep. It's a tough, you know, tough history for sure.
Absolutely.
And then with Andrew, the tracelet things, I saw a headline. Is that just for spring training?
It is, but okay. I can see them trying to institute that if it works out really well. I know the NBA had them. I know football had them, and actually I know some players got in trouble in football. I know the Raiders definitely did for taking them off, and that cost them, I think, a week because their whole offensive line went down because they all took them off, and some of them caught COVID. So it's just as long as they wear them, they can – track where they are, make sure they're not going to bars, they're not going to Magic City Wings. So we want to avoid what was it, the Marlins that went wild in Atlanta last year?
Yeah, they went to a strip club.
They went to Magic City. So we want to avoid that. And whatever you can do to keep these players held in check, let's just say, because we all know that there is a lot of free time down in spring training.
Yeah. I'm surprised like somebody hasn't thrown a fit about it, but you know, be that as it may. I've also heard somewhere that there could be fans at Fenway for the home opener. So
yeah. Kennedy was saying that they're still working with the city to determine what they can do, and they were cautiously optimistic that there could be. And actually, I popped on SeatGeek earlier, and you can buy tickets for opening day at Fenway Park. So I don't know why I went on that. Obviously, I'm not going to be anywhere near that ballpark. I'm in Denver, but I was just a little curious to see if they were selling tickets, and there were some pretty good seats available. So I don't know if that may be just a glitch or if it's a little bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah, Ace Ticket still hasn't resolved. I had opening day tickets last year, but and they were calling me like once a month for updates, but that stopped around August. So I don't know. Hopefully I don't go on an Ace Ticket rant here, but I should probably get in touch with them. Yeah, so I'm not going to speculate on what could or could not happen with that. But all right, so I guess we will wrap with that. You know, an emergency episode in the books. Do we know when pitchers and catchers are actually going to show up? I would think that would be next week. Today's the 10th.
I want to say
it's usually, what, the first, second week of February. So it should be any day, a couple days. What truck day? When's truck day?
It was yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was Wednesday.
It could have been yesterday, actually. Yeah.
Actually, I thought it was today. So it was yesterday, Andrew?
I think I saw tweets on it for yesterday. Yeah. So it looks like pitchers and catchers report on the 17th for the Red Sox.
17th. Okay.
All right.
First workouts on the 18th, position players on the 21st.
Yeah. Traditionally, though, the position players seem to show up pretty early. So I'm not sure if the
COVID is... Unless you're Manny Ramirez and attending your grandmother's funeral for the eighth year in a row. I think that was always his excuse for showing up like 5 days late.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why he doesn't get recognized in bars in New Zealand or whatever it was. So, all right. For the listening audience, we'll be back as soon as anything develops. And enjoy, I don't know, we're freezing our asses off up here in New England.
What's the weather up there?
It was the feels like temperature was 9 below this morning, and I was in a Freightliner with very limited heat. So yeah,
Jesus, dude, it was 22 today.
That was
it was brutal.
I think it got up to about that. But for the audience, take care.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.